You know, it keeps me calm, John. That's the key here. I just got to be calm because, guys, we have a lot to talk about today in this show. Tons of rookies. We got wide receivers. We got tight ends. We got Odell Beckham Jr. We got Saquon being a dick. You know what? Let's just get to it. What's up, everybody, and welcome to this week's edition of the Dynasty Diehards. I am so stoked to be here with my co-host, the one and only, the beard, the Viking, John Helmkamp. And with us today, we have a super special guest, one of my favorite people in this space, Mr. Matt Ward. Matthew, sir, how are you doing today, man?
I'm doing good, man. It's always a pleasure to get on the mic with you, and I'm happy to sit down with John for the first time as well. Yeah, man, it's a pleasure as always.
Awesome. We got a lot to talk about, guys. We've got some news that broke today. So let's go ahead and just get right on into it. So as I teased, this wasn't the first thing on the show sheet, but since it broke, I had to bring it up. Saquon Barkley says he's not playing on the franchise tag. He's refusing to sign it. Now, this could have a lot of implications in a lot of different places, not just in New York, but across the league if they end up dealing him or he doesn't play. Could this be Le'Veon Bell 2.0, guys? I mean, John, let's start with you. First of all, is he going to play? Is he going to sit? Is he going to get traded?
I don't like it. I also feel for him because he's a running back, which is the most discredited position in the NFL outside of, you know, special teams. And he's been an incredible talent when he's healthy. On the field, he's proven his worth to the franchise. He's been incredibly devoted to New York through some really, really bad years. Honestly, I don't like it because it took a few months, right, to hear that this was his plan. I don't like that he's deciding that he's not going to sign it when the franchise tag happened. I think 2 months ago is when it came out that they were going to tag him and they were extending Daniel Jones. Like, make your peace then, you know? Say what you want to say then. Try to leverage for more money. We know that he wants more money. We know he was wanting about $18 million a year, I think was the number that was being floated around, which is a heavy price to pay for a running back, especially a running back that's had some injuries and is getting up there in years. I say getting up there in years like he's 30. He's not. But at the running back position, it's just so replaceable in the NFL. You can easily go, okay, well, we'll just – move on to the NFL draft and find someone else in the mid rounds and move on from there. So to me, I think this gets resolved. I think that New York probably gives him a pretty high average contract for like 2 years to make him happy and keep him there. That's the way that I kind of see it going. Cause I think he wants to be there. I think New York wants him to be there, but he doesn't want to play on the tag. And I feel like he deserved the extension more than Daniel Jones, to be honest. We talked about that, I think, before the tag window opened. So for me, I think they're going to get it done on a 2-year high average contract with maybe a 3rd-year team option that's lower in a cap hit or something like that. But I don't really know what else he's kind of expecting to have happen. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like he's going to get a 6-year contract. He's a running back. It's not going to happen. So if he doesn't want to play on the tag in New York, because maybe he's worried about getting injured again and then entering free agency with nothing guaranteed. And maybe he's just looking for 2 to 3 years guaranteed where he knows that he has some stability for the next couple of years.
Well, and I think that's a fair point. I mean, last season was his highest volume season of his career. He had 295 carries. He also had the most rushing yards and the second most touchdowns. So the production's there. And there was no signs of it slowing down. In fact, post-injury, this is the best season he's had.
Yeah.
Matt, what does it mean for this franchise if he does sit? Is Daniel Jones just completely screwed? Because, I mean, let's be honest here. They haven't collected a ton of stellar weapons outside of Darren Waller. And there's even a question as to if Waller's viability is going to be much this season.
Here's the thing. I do want to hear from Matt on this, but if they have concerns entering the draft that Saquon is going to sit, we already expect them to go wide receiver in round one. But if Saquon, if they've got a threat on their mind going, we really don't know if he's going to be there, to me, it's a guarantee, write it in ink, that they're going wide receiver with their late first round pick. They're in that range in the draft where we have a bunch of wide receivers that we've been discussing. You know, if Jordan Addison slips there, Zay Flowers, Josh Downs, whoever it is, a sure. bunch of those late first round wide receiver targets. I think they should do that anyways, even if Saquon is going to be coming back and they get this sorted before the draft. But that's only 2 weeks from tomorrow. It's Wednesday night that we're recording this. 2 weeks from Thursday that the draft happens. I think they should absolutely go wide receiver in round one because you have Brian Daboll in the building. You just brought in Darren Waller at tight end. Go get a first-round wide receiver, see what you have in Daniel Jones, and let him rip it. I mean, you might as well, right? You're giving him the money. Let's see if he can produce if he's got a wide receiver core.
That's a fair point.
New York's options at that point in the draft at wide receiver aren't going to answer many questions anyway. I think they have to bolster that depth chart just because of how weak it is. Obviously, Saquon's an integral part. I don't think he's just replaceable piece either. Like, as you suggested, you know, you can attack those middle rounds and get an Isaiah Pacheco, but obviously Saquon is above replacement in almost everything than guys like Pacheco, guys like Damian Pierce, Tyler Algiers, and you can point at the Chris Rodriguez's, the, you know, Kendall Milton's, those guys in this draft class and say the same thing, and maybe even at a lesser extent. Saquon himself was quoted in the offseason saying that he didn't expect to reset the running back market. So I do agree with John in the sense that they can probably come to a deal here, probably be in that, you know, top 10 range, but we're getting to a point in the NFL, and obviously it's transgressing into fantasy, where the running back position really doesn't matter. And it's not just a matter of like the level of talent that you need in that position. There's obviously replacement level rushers, but there's nuances to that position, such as pass blocking and scheme and what a guy can do above replacement. Like, he doesn't actually need to be catching passes. If he's a plus receiver, it changes defensive schemes, things of that nature. But with that said, it's not a position that you're going to see. Like, Ezekiel Elliott ruined the market. You're never going to see another contract like that again, ever, period. Well, from anybody. It doesn't matter Jerry if it's Bijan Robinson. Yeah. I mean, exactly, though. He absolutely ruined the market. So the idea that Saquon doesn't expect to reset it or set himself, and there might be a little bit of a change of heart here now that, because they didn't give him an extension option at all, merely just the franchise tag, obviously a little bit of a change of heart, I think, with that. But yeah, in that $18 million, if they can get, you know, say, kind of come down a bit on that, like we're haggling houses, but 28 for 2 years with that third team option, I think that puts the Giants still in a position where obviously these options have to come in on young contracts anyway. They're going to have to, in the next 2 years, attack wide receiver heavy in the draft. So, yeah, I think that we could move something there. Sitting out for him would be an absolutely horrendous idea because of everything I just alluded to.
I don't think he sits. I don't think that's an option. I think that the Le'Veon Bell and Melvin Gordon situations in San Diego, when they were actually still in San Diego, are going to paint a picture for what can happen to a running back. If you sit out, it's not worth it because running back is such a short shelf life. And if you are not producing, they're moving on. Austin Eckler, if you remember, was a depth piece in the Chargers offense. That was an occasional passing down running back. And then Melvin Gordon decided to sit out and they're like, oh, maybe we can feature this guy a little bit more. And he made them go, okay, Melvin, you're good. See ya. We don't need you. So doing that for Saquon is a horrible choice. I don't think you should do that at all. Barkley is guaranteed a little over $10 million this year on the tag. He was wanting like 18 is what was being reported earlier in the offseason. Meet in the middle. I completely agree with what Matt's saying. 14 million, you know, guaranteed this year, maybe 10 million guaranteed next year, with bonuses on top of it, something like that, where you're kind of meeting in the middle of those two numbers, give Saquon a little bit more longevity, a little bit more guaranteed money. He can kind of be where he wants to be. I think he's happy in New York. We haven't heard him say anything where he's saying that he just wants to get out of there and demanding a trade. But just give him like this 2-year guaranteed contract that's front loaded for this season, gives him top 6 to 8 money at the running back position, and then incentive based on games played, you know, statistical markers, stuff like that, whatever it is, whatever the incentives are in next year's contract. And then maybe like a 3rd-year option for the Giants. Let's get something like that done. Let's call it a day. He wants to be there. We want him to be there. I want him to stay in New York. Let's just get this done and move on. Well, and like, honestly, if it's going to happen, if it's going to happen though, it should happen before the draft, because they need to know what their 100% plans are at the position going forward. So we're on a 2-week clock here, in my opinion, with Saquon. And if it doesn't happen before that, they could very well decide, all right, well, we're using a 4th-round pick on a running back because we don't know what's going to happen here with Saquon, and we need to get some depth in the room.
Or they move Saquon to move up and get Bijan. Just saying, I don't think that would actually happen, but that would be fun. Guys, I want to go to the chat real quick. We got a friend of the show, Jamie Bogg, chiming in saying, sup, guys. Jamie, thank you so much for showing in. And our boy, Smokey Hill Nelson, that goddamn beard just keep going, dude. Tell me about it. It's like one of my favorite things about John. Yeah, we'll stop now. And we're going to move on. We're going to talk about another kind of Giant, former Giant, polarizing figure, Odell Beckham Jr., signs with the Ravens. Guys, first of all, does this make Lamar a lock to come back? Matt, we'll start with you.
I don't think so. I mean, if based on those like Instagram photos, I know that's obviously some big rumblings that Lamar shared a screenshot of a FaceTime that they had. Man, to me, that's honestly nothing more than like boys getting their boys bags. Like, I don't really see that as like I'm absolutely staying. But there is something that I've, you know, kind of churned up and said a couple times on some other guest spots. But I don't think that regardless of Lamar staying or moving, if the Ravens do move, there's going to be a franchise quarterback in Baltimore. That's all I really need to say. Regardless of if it's Lamar or not, there will be a franchise quarterback in Baltimore at the start of the 2023 season.
And so you don't think it's going to be not Tyler Huntley? Are you calling Tyler Huntley a franchise quarterback, man?
No, I mean, a Pro Bowler Tyler Huntley, for all of his accolades that he's collected, is no. And I mean, I don't think that the Ravens view him as that either. Tyler Huntley is absolutely an above replacement level backup, meaning he will probably stick around in the NFL for another decade doing exactly this. Totally. But no, Tyler Huntley's not a franchise quarterback, and no disrespect to Snoop, but I think the Ravens know that as well. They're also the only, speaking of sitting out, that's the only way that they don't have a franchise quarterback starting 2023 is if Lamar refuses to play on the tag and completely sits out. But if it comes via trade, obviously they're never moving on from Lamar without the assets to at least select one of the top three in this current draft, or a team moving off of somebody in a, you know, maybe in a worse contract situation. But it's not going to be another, like, you know, a Stafford for Goff type thing. Like, they're probably going to want the draft capital attached. So yeah, I don't think it means Lamar's a lock, but I do think it means that Rashad Bateman is going to have a little bit of the pressure relieved off him. Mark Andrews obviously still going to dominate over the middle, but OBJ is not somebody that I think is going to step into a 25% target share at this juncture in his career.
Yeah, and that was going to be my next question. I'll throw this one to you, John. For Dynasty, where are you at on Odell Beckham? Is he worth even acquiring at this point? Because realistically, what are you going to get for him? A 3rd or 4th round? You can get him probably a 3rd or 4th round pick.
So here's the thing. I've been seeing some really stupid stuff taking place in my leagues. I've seen people who have him sending me offers wanting like a mid-second in exchange for OBJ. And I've just gone, thank you. Nope. Like, we're not doing that. That's just not what it's going to be. And the thing about OBJ, when he's healthy, when he was in his prime, everything about it, OBJ was arguably the best wide receiver in football. And it's so difficult to evaluate who he is as a player because we don't really know what the injuries have done to him, the toll that they've taken. We know he's coming off one now. We know the last time we saw him on the field for the Rams, he looked good. I mean, he looked like a good wide receiver. He looked like someone that you could potentially pencil in as a wide receiver 2 or a flex play. But that was before yet another injury. And now he's going to another system. What I will say is that this offense now has made it very, very clear with the hiring of Todd Monken, who, by the way, was in Cleveland at the same time as OBJ.
Yes.
So that is a familiarity. They know who he is. And clearly, you have to think that Monken had a say in this signing. And he went, yeah, I think that he can be an asset if you bring him in here. Because you're not going to not do that due diligence with someone who was literally on a staff with this wide receiver a couple years ago. So I think that Monken wants him. I think that Monken is wanting to make this into a pass-based offense. I think that Baltimore is going to flip the script completely in terms of what we've seen this offense be. And I do believe this means that Lamar Jackson is back. I think that Todd Monken and OBJ, they're going to Lamar and they're saying, listen, we've had you run a run-based offense your entire career here. It hasn't gotten us to where we want to be. We think that we can create this innovative offense with Todd Monken that has you throwing the ball more, showcases your arm more, takes less pressure off your legs, less injury risk, and we can make this a more explosive, high-octane offense, which is what it takes in the AFC when you're talking about Herbert and Mahomes and Burrow and all the other AFC quarterbacks and offenses that are tearing it up for 5,000 passing yards a season, it seems like. I think they know that that's what's going to have to get it done. And OBJ is a step in that process. I would not be surprised at all to see them also use that late first-round pick on a wide receiver. I think they double down. I think you have Rashad Bateman, Odell Beckham Jr., and let's call it Zay Flowers or something like that as being your trio of wide receivers coming in this next year in Baltimore, because I think they are wanting to just literally open up the throttle and say we're full go in a passing offense.
Well, and to that point, I mean, I don't think this is a bad football signing. I just want to make that very clear.
For the team
and for their wide receiver room to have that veteran presence. And if, whatever we've heard about OBJ, you can't deny that the situation in Cleveland to him was just absolute shit. Okay.
Yep.
It was a bad situation. Baker Mayfield doesn't support fantasy relevancy in wide receivers. I think
15 points per game the moment that he stepped onto the Rams offense kind of proof that.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Exactly.
He can still play.
Not to take that away from Nate, but absolutely he can still play.
Yeah, exactly. He can play. So that's not the question. I mean, his fantasy relevancy, I can't see with the injuries him having enough volume really to be more than like a wide receiver three or flex play. But I think that there is some value there. And in Dynasty or best ball for that matter, I know this isn't a best ball show, but it's best ball time of year. And let's be honest, if you like Dynasty and you're looking for some mock drafts, best ball is a great way to do it. Maybe to get practice, maybe win some money on it for some practice. But I'm not rushing out to get him. But he's a guy who I'd be willing to take in the late rounds of a best ball draft on underdog. I would have no problem with that. If you're at a dynasty startup, I'm happy to take a stab on him in a late round if he's still floating around, because I think most dynasty managers are looking at this like this is a 1 year to 2 year max value on this guy at that wide receiver three flex. Now, speaking of minimal value on a player, Tyreek Hill says he's going to retire after the 2025 season. We've seen people start to panic about this, which, John, let's hear it. I know you're passionate about this, so let's hear it.
Buy him everywhere.
Yes.
If people are freaking out going, oh my God, he's going to retire in 3 years, buy him wherever you can. Because he's proven that he's an electric playmaker, one of the best playmakers in the entire NFL, if not the best playmaker in the entire NFL with the ball in his hand, as evidenced by the fact that there was a fumble this last season where he went, oh shit, I can pick that up. And he just housed it on a fumble recovery. Like anytime he touches the ball, he is a threat to score. Tua's coming back. Tua is healthy. This offense was dynamic in their first year of figuring out what this could look like. You give them another year to develop this offense and the scheme and the timing and the fit for everyone involved. And Tyreek Hill is a dynamic elite wide receiver one. I don't see it as anything less than that. He is an elite playmaker that is capable of the highest ceiling of any wide receiver in the NFL on any given week.
See, so, all this feels like to me is he's going to retire before we see that typical wide receiver dip in value. So he's really, honestly, he's saving you a lot of trouble if you have him rostered, because now after the 2025 season, you don't have to figure out what the hell am I going to do with an aging wide receiver whose game is based on speed. He just retired. So now you can just drop him and start fresh.
I'm just literally going all in on Tyreek Hill everywhere that I can acquire him and going, cool, I have three more seasons of elite wide receiver one production and I'll figure my roster out after that. But for now, I'm banking on the most explosive athletic wide receiver in the NFL continuing to do that for three more years. So yeah, exactly. If someone's freaking out about this because they're too invested in like youth and getting ahead of the curve and selling early and stuff like that, give them to me. I'll give you a late first all day long for Tyreek Hill. No question. Give you two firsts for Tyreek Hill.
Matt, what would you give up to get Tyreek Hill? I mean, are you with John here where it's first, whatever, elite receiver?
Yeah, I think right now where he's at on the market, there's been a little bit of a panic and eject button for sure. So he's dropped down to that wide receiver eight value a little further outside of that second round. I'll absolutely take that all day. So that is essentially 1-4 of rookie values. I would be happy to trade off missing out on JSN for.
Oh my God. You can get Tyreek Hill for the 104.
Yeah, probably. I almost guarantee people would trade JSN for Tyreek Hill.
If that's the value, give me Tyreek.
Specifically, that spot being the tier break for whether you're going to go quarterback or have the luxury of taking JSN, I think people would absolutely make that trade. And I mean, market consensus agrees. Yeah, I'm to reiterate and piggyback off of Nate. There's always the risk of career cliffs occurring. You finally have the benefit of a player telling you exactly when that cliff is going to happen. Like, I'm not going to be here anymore. And look at the contract that Odell Beckham Jr. just got. Like, I'm pretty sure that Tyreek Hill would pay $18.5 million to be a decoy rather than streaming on YouTube.
yeah, probably. Absolutely. All right, so I think we've settled this Tyreek Hill talk. And now it's time to get into the meat of this episode. We want to talk some incoming rookie class sleepers. Last week, we broke down the quarterbacks that we like, including some Stetson Bennett love, some Max Duggan love. Now, we're going to get into wide receivers and tight ends, which this wide receiver class, Matt, do you feel like this is just kind of an incredibly deep class this year, or are you not as excited as you were last year for some of these guys?
No, I think it's a deep class. I think the issue, in all honesty, with a devaluation of the 2023 class is that when everybody was projecting these incredible rookie running backs like Tank Bigsby and Sean Tucker and Zach Evans in 2020, who have still remained to be pretty impressive prospects for all intents and purposes, they did not expect that in 3 years, the entire dynasty market would devalue the running back position completely. So that is the issue with this class. Now, these wide receivers have obviously fallen in tiers around those same running backs, but it's not like it doesn't offer some deep talent. Definitely not as deep as last year as far as the prospect evaluations go, but I think you might have a little bit of a better outcome, especially with guys like, I mean, we'll get into them, but I think there's a lot of guys that were expected to be junior risers that didn't really hit those expected threshold, so that might have a little bit of the narrative or that negative narrative attached as well. But yeah, it's a great wide receiver class. And I mean, again, for pure prospect profiles like JSN, Jordan Addison, Quentin Johnson, I mean, Josh Downs, even phenomenally analytic profile, but just gets discounted for size and ACC competition. Obviously, like these guys were stronger in their prospects than Jahan Dotson and George Pickens and it's a great class. I mean, not even good. It's an absolutely great class. And I think because the negativity has been attached to just having to spend that value now that it's actually come to draft time, where you actually have to use those picks on the running back that the market is no longer excited about, there's some negativity attached, but it certainly shouldn't be because of the talent of the prospects themselves.
Sure. John, let's start with your sleeper in this wide receiver class, because we've got a neat little graphic we want to bring up. If I can figure out where I put that. Here we go. We're going to pop that up on the screen as soon as I get there. I just created this whole layout today, so bear with me for a minute here. All right, John.
You did done good.
Marvin Mims Jr.
Yeah. I mean, love Hollywood Brown.
Ooh. Yeah, he's Hollywood Brown, except more consistent, in my opinion. I think Hollywood Brown is potentially a little bit more explosive, but Marvin Mims offers a little bit more stability to the quarterback that's thrown to him. But this is a guy that can be a high target volume wide receiver. And I want to go through this because I think the RAS, relative athletic score, is very valuable. And by the way, if you are listening and not watching on YouTube, stop it and go to YouTube. And give us a like and give us a subscribe and check out this lovely little graphic that's up here on the screen right now, because it takes into account his athletic testing, his size, his explosion grade, and his composite agility score, which really is not here because he didn't do a shuttle. But what you see out of Marvin Mims, and I tweeted this out, I was doing some like last minute film on him, and he's a guy that I've been watching for years, but I wanted to revisit him right before the combine. And I went back and I pulled up his tape and I put out a tweet like 2 days before the combine, basically saying that Marvin Mims, I think, is going to absolutely blow the top off the combine and earn himself a lot of money this week. And that is exactly what he did. So he comes in at 5'10 and 7'8", so just under 5'11", 183 pounds. And what you see here on this graphic on the screen is that the composite side grade is poor. However, I am fascinated to watch these numbers change in the next 5 years or so. When you start taking into account the average size of wide receivers in the NFL, the league is going to a smaller wide receiver that can run routes with explosion and agility and create separation because of their change of direction ability. That's what the NFL is really going to. The 6'4", 230 wide receiver is kind of a dying breed, which kind of sucks because I love those big body wide receivers. But Marvin Mims is today's wide receiver, 5'11", 183. He's right in line with what we've seen succeed in the NFL in the last few years. So I don't really care about his composite size score that we have here. What I do care about is his explosion grade, elite, 39.5-inch vert, 10'9" broad, running a 4.38 40 with a 1.5 second 10-yard split. This dude is as athletic as it gets. He's a top-tier elite athleticism wide receiver who has also shown ability in his film to separate, to run great routes, to make contested catches. I honestly don't understand why he's being slept on as much as he is. It's actually been kind of cool because in the last month, he's been climbing people's boards and he's really been popping. I think the combine really helped him, but I expect Marvin Mims to get round two draft cap. And I think he's going to go to a team that is going to be thrilled to have him. Like you said, a Hollywood Brown type wide receiver, except I think he actually offers more upside and more consistency than Hollywood Brown.
I think that's disrespectful to Hollywood.
You know what? It probably is, but I love Marvin Mims. I think Marvin Mims versus Hollywood Brown is a great comp and a really, really good conversation to have. I think it's close, and I love that you brought it up. So to me, Mims is one of those guys that I'm leaving. So far in rookie drafts, he's going late second round, if not early third. And if I can get him there, I'm taking that all day long as a high upside wide receiver.
Sure. So I want to kind of go back to something that you said, John, with the size, because I think it's important to know when we're talking about size and how this is the new build of a successful athletic wide receiver in the NFL.
Yep,
sure. Do you think, I'll throw this to you, Matt, do you think that has a lot to do with the fact that how the rules of the game have changed? It's not as physical. It's not as in the 100%. Trenches. So you don't have to have Megatron to be successful. You don't need that big-bodied wide receiver. It's become more of a finesse game. So we're going to see guys like Devonta Smith has been successful at his slight size. Everyone was worried about Marvin Mims is probably going to be successful. I have a feeling this is going to be one of the guys we talk about next season. It was like, why was everybody so low on Marvin Mims? And that attitude seems to be shifting in the league.
So I think the number is 17. I think it's 17 wide receivers since 2002 have been drafted in the first round under 5'10". Seven of them come in the last 6 years.
Right.
So yeah, 100% that is changing. The NFL knows it's changing, and the dynasty market seems to be too slow to adjust. Meaning guys like DeVonta Smith, guys like Hollywood Brown, who, you know, just to throw out the, I do think more than just helmet scouting that it is a positive comp, Marvin Mims to Hollywood. But I mean, Hollywood quite literally for every single season of his professional collegiate career or football career, like moving away from high school, except for his first season in Baltimore, he has led the team in targets and production. So that on field at Oklahoma with CeeDee Lamb, with Mark Andrews, that is in Baltimore every single season. And then during his tenure in Arizona, for the first five games, he was wide receiver 5 in points per game with 17.7. So Hollywood is absolutely elite. I do think it's a positive comp, but that is kind of the point that I'm trying to make, is these undersized wide receivers that may not get the love they deserve on the dynasty market, where it's going to create a bit of an apex where the production that they provide and the length of that production and the insulation of that production is going to be much more valuable than the return that you can get from them on the trade market. Yeah. Guys like Hollywood Brown, who are always around wide receiver 20 and has never been close to that low of a floor in points per game.
Right. Right. All right, Matt, I want to kind of pivot to yours because I'm interested to hear about this. This isn't a guy, admittedly, I get to my rookie grading a little bit late in the season, so I can get a little bit behind on some of these prospects. I want to hear about your guy because this isn't a guy I know a whole lot about.
Yeah, I mean, my sleeper wide receiver for this year, and I kind of like planted my flag a little early, and I'm going to be a bit stubborn about it. There are certain, all of it has to come to cost acquisition, I will say that first, but there are certain things that I'm willing to ignore when I can add nuance to them. Obviously, I do analytic process mostly to remove a lot of bias in the first place, but it's Rakim Jarrett. It's Rakim Jarrett out of Maryland. Rakim really set up after his freshman season and his sophomore to, like, it was just below the thresholds, like just below all of those analytic thresholds that you love to see. And it just seemed like everything was progressing for a big junior breakout, and that didn't come. Now, the nuance to that is Maryland. Like, that's the nuance, is Maryland's passing offense absolutely falls apart, and there wasn't enough volume or production to supplement anything positive in his analytic profile. Athletically, he's good, not great, but Rakim really has that kind of potential to become one of those, exactly what we were just alluding to, really one of those undervalued, undersized guys that are going to produce above their market value. And his game is after the catch. Like, there's going to be definitely needed a positive system for him so he can get a little bit of those manufactured touches, can dominate the slot or outside positionally, but needs a bit of a lower depth of target so he can work in space. But I love Rakim Jarrett's ceiling. And this, when it comes to sleepers, the most important part, like, you could have called Damian Pierce a sleeper last season and sure, a fourth round pick, but as soon as people started drafting him in the first round, that's not a sleeper. Like, I'm out at that cost. Sleepers have to be guys that are obviously below that analytic or film grade or that NFL draft grade process to push their value up to where, you know, it actually is risk adverse to spend that draft capital on them. But you're going to get Rakim Jarrett at like the middle of the third, the back end of the third, and there's nobody in that tier stands for waiting a 3-year breakout for some of these rookie tight ends that has the ceiling that Rakim Jarrett offers.
Yeah, you know,
I like that. I want to just like add on top of that. I completely agree with what he was saying in the fact that entering this junior year, he was one of the names that I was watching for a 3-year breakout in college, and it didn't happen. And Taulia Tagovailoa, Tua's little brother, is the quarterback there in Maryland, and he's breaking all kinds of Maryland records and stuff like that, but the passing game still was not great. He checks in at like just under 6 foot and 192 pounds. Those were his combine measurements. So he has decent enough size. And I agree. I think that he possesses a lot of talent. He was really someone that was on the radar coming out of high school, going into college. So for someone that you can get in the third round, maybe even the fourth, depending on how the draft breaks.
True.
Because at this point, I feel like the third and the fourth round of your rookie drafts are way more volatile. You have people in your leagues that are going, this is 100%. My guy in those rounds that I think has the upside, and I'm going to draft him whether it's 10 to 12 picks above his ADP or not. I'm just taking the upside dart throw there. So Rakim Jarrett has really not been receiving a lot of hype. He didn't tear up the combine. He's not anyone that your league is going to be going, oh, that dude's a riser and I need to be paying attention to right now. But I think that he does have a lot of talent. So if you're looking for an upside pick in the third, maybe even the fourth round of your rookie drafts, you can do a lot worse than Rakim Jarrett.
Agreed.
Well, and so I'm looking on Player Profiler, looking at their profiles. Their profiles are fantastic. His athleticism score sits at a 97.9, which is absolutely nothing to shake a stick at. And the dude's fast, a 4.440. I'm not sad about that. It's faster than I could run. And to your point,
not saying much, bro. Let's be honest.
Hey, I was fast in high school 26 years ago.
Yeah, well, right? So was Rakim Jarrett.
Yeah, right. Fair enough. But here, and to Matt's point, like I watched Maryland. I watched a few Maryland games. That passing offense sucked. It sucked.
Yeah, and to speak to like not saying much is Tyler did set a bunch of Maryland records and singles, but that's not saying much. Like
it's not saying much,
right?
It's
Maryland. 2,800 yards.
Possibly the ugliest kind of words in college football. By the way,
2,800 yards. Congratulations on your record.
Right. Well, I mean, if you look at it, you know, last season, 62 catches on 90 targets. Then in 2022, we had 40 catches, only 471 yards. When the team's not getting the ball downfield, you're not going to be successful. And when you're in an offense that just simply can't throw the ball well, you're not going to see the yardage come. But if he's getting, he had 62 targets in 2021. If he gets 62 targets his rookie season in a competent NFL offense, he probably turns that into 1,000 yards, given his speed and his breakaway capabilities and athleticism. So I really like this one. Now, what's interesting is the guy that I picked is Trey Palmer out of Nebraska. And first of all, I'm a big CU fan, so this is really hard for me, real hard for me, even though it's not so much a rivalry anymore.
Flirting
with the enemy, man. What can I do? But my guy, Trey Palmer, just sits one spot underneath your guy, Rakim Jarrett. But I don't understand why he's being slept on, guys. Like, can you explain this to me? Because his numbers, 71 catches, 111 targets, 1,043 yards. He's got a 32.7% target share in that offense in Nebraska last season, 64% catch rate. Like, those are the things you want to see. 9 receiving touchdowns. Yes, John.
I would like to interject. His athletic profile is one of the most baffling things I've ever seen from a wide receiver prospect. Okay, so he checks in at 6'2", basically 6'1¼, 192 pounds, fine, whatever. His vert, 29.5.
Horrible. Keyshawn Boutte level vertical.
It's sub Keyshawn Boutte vertical level. His broad jump, 9'6". Horrible. But then he goes out and he runs a 4.33 40.
Yep. He's in the 88th percentile in speed score.
His shuttle at a 4.26 grades at a 6 out of 10 on RAS, but then his 3 cone is a 7.13, which is a 3.86 out of 10. So his athletic
sounds
testing,
like coaches at Nebraska didn't know how to train for the combine.
I have no idea what's
that's literally
going
what that sounds like.
His athletic profile. Basically, what I'm seeing is he can run really fast in a straight line and nothing else. So it's baffling. His athletic testing is just such a question mark that I don't know what to do with it. So I agree with you that the production is there and some of the flashes are there, and he's an interesting, you know, late round flyer to take, but I'm baffled by what to do with this guy when you look at his athletic testing.
I want to go to what Matt said. Scott Frost was the head coach. What more do you need to know?
Yeah, well,
Nebraska has been a mess for like 3 or 4 years, 5 years. They're in a conference they don't belong in. It's a team that just simply can't get it done. And I don't necessarily
worried.
Well, I don't necessarily think that I'm not as worried about these combine scores as a lot of other people are. I don't necessarily care all that much.
I think there's, I do have to kind of like put my brand on a little bit here, especially from the analytic perspective. Like, fortunately, now there's a give and take here, and it's cyclical and it's difficult to assess, but combine scores, athletic grades, how they perform at the pro day will affect draft capital more than anything else. And we also know that draft capital rounds out analytic profiles better than anything else. If guys check the same boxes, the one that is drafted higher has a better hit rate. It's quite literally that simple to figure out. And so that being said, we've also seen, at least, you know, more recently and over the last decade, that athletic scores, and again, going to kind of what John said, is we're changing the prototype of what it means to be an athletic wide receiver. So the same athletic scores that we've gauged in the past don't have the same correlation to fantasy and real life football success that they used to. Like, I know it was on a bad knee. I always have to bring this up, but Keenan Allen ran a 4.7 almost.
Yeah.
Like, it's more about deceleration, as John said, change of direction. So I value things like three cone and those agility scores, those a lot more than just straight 40s and explosion scores. But that's why specifically this is such a confusing profile as well.
Yeah.
It's baffling. Like to... And basically what I'm hearing is that Matt hated DK Metcalf. So cool.
I kind of didn't like DK, to be honest, or N'Keal Harry, but yeah.
N'Keal Harry.
I didn't really love N'Keal DK, Harry's, so that was a miss on my part.
Hey, N'Keal Harry's Harry a terrible wide receiver. So, yeah. One of the guy covers himself in routes, and how often can you say that, right? Ooh. Like, yeah, no, it's bad. Okay, so you guys didn't like mine, but now let's move on to some tight ends. And Matt, I'm going to let you go first with your tight end here because I like this one. I like this one a lot.
Yeah, and tight end sleepers are kind of difficult in this class. John was saying it off camera when we were setting up and shooting the shit is a lot of these tight ends are getting a lot of high praise. So, you know, these names are kind of known in the dynasty circles, but certainly I think of those names, Sam Laporta out of Iowa, which is tight end university, is still getting slept on quite a bit. And, you know, he's never had a single season below 10.0 yards per reception, averages 12.5 yards per reception for his career. He had a 21.5, 21.0, and 27% target share his final three seasons. Obviously spent all 4 years at Iowa there, a little bit of a later breakout. But when we consider how long it takes for tight ends to acclimate to the NFL level, I'm absolutely fine with a guy that spends 4, even 5 years in college at that position.
Right.
Because you're seeing, like, I always like to use Dallas Goedert as an example because he quite literally spent 4 years and then his fifth year option was picked up before they even got rid of Zach Ertz and people were like, this is the next great tight end breakout. Like, that's how long these guys are, you know, will kind of hold at least a high level of perception if they've shown flashes throughout their career. Like, you don't necessarily need tight end one numbers right away. And when you do see it, like, those guys are unicorns. So I really like Sam Laporta. I do think it will be a little bit of a quicker breakout than some of his draft mates. It's still going to be a developmental time, but he does quite literally everything above average. And specifically, one of the issues with these rookie tight ends is they may be incredible vertical threats or great possession receivers, but they struggle in blocking or mix and match, whatever one of those three categories you want to say. And Laporta just does everything really, really well.
Well, and it, kind of to your point about these guys staying in college a little bit longer and because it takes them longer to break out, you also see in college football – a lot of these programs don't use tight ends the same as you're used in the NFL. They're looked at as primarily blockers because that's the way that the college games works. It's just plain simple fact. Now, what is a little concerning is that he had 94 targets, only 58 catches in 2022. But again, you're talking about a college program and Iowa was okay.
You are literally talking about one of the worst offenses in college football. Period, blanket statement. He was the lone bright spot in that. And I know that our podcast and all these shows like to be like, oh, you bring up one person and oh, you bring up another. But no, Sam Laporta is that dude. And coming from tight end university where you've seen them develop some of the best tight ends in the NFL, if you're banking on one late round tight end to become a fucking stud, like, pardon my French, censor me if you need to, but it's Sam Laporta because this is what this offense has done year in, year out. Noah Fant, I mean, George Kittle, I mean, everybody, all the top tight ends seem to come out of Iowa. And if I'm banking on another person that you can get with third round draft cap in your rookie draft, it's going to be the dude that has had that coaching.
It's got to be all the corn, right? They're just like force feeding him corn and beef out there. And
cornbread and Iowa strong, fed, right? Baby.
Cornbread Iowa fed. I love it. I love it. I really like this. I think that
I
he's
really like
be
yours,
people...
to be honest, too. So,
well, you know, I'll go last here. John, I want to hear yours. Give me your rookie sleeper tight end.
I'm honestly mad that I didn't get Sam Laporta because he was the name that I was watching throughout this entire draft cycle and before this last college football season. And he's done nothing to disappoint. And I'm super excited and think he's going to be a very, very solid NFL
athleticism
tight
off the charts too, by the way, for those that we didn't mention that is athleticism. It's freaky.
You know what you want out of tight ends? I want someone with great athleticism, great hands. That's also a good run blocker. I know like the Kyle Pitts model where you can kick him out and basically call him a wide receiver that has tight end eligibility is great, but I kind of want these tight ends that are going to be on the field three downs because they're going to be used in run blocking, but then they also see those schemes where it's like, oh, you're going to chip and the defense thinks that you're blocking and then we're going to leak you
those
out
peel
into
off
a route.
Yeah, the peel off routes. I mean, I'm not much of a film guy, but obviously I still watch football for entertainment purposes and every game as many, much as possible. And like you look at Travis Kelce's incredible runs and you look at even Darren Waller's season, big season, and George Kittle's big season where they all finished as top 12 wide receivers. You just watch those. They're peel routes. They're all peel routes.
Yeah,
they are, because they are also legitimate blocking threats. And it's basically the tight end version of an RPO. It's basically 100%. That. It's going, okay, cool. So defense has to account for me being that extra blocker on the edge, but then I'm going to release and leak and come out here into the flat where I'm mismatched against a linebacker that runs half a second slower than I do. Like, it's a mismatch when you have these tight ends that can block and also run great routes. You don't know how they're going to be used on any given play, which puts defensive coordinators in a massive bind in terms of how are you going to line up against this person? Am I putting a coverage corner, like a slot or a nickel defender against this tight end that he's just going to bury into the ground and you do this route or this run play against? Or am I putting a linebacker that I think is going to actually be able to stand up against the run blocking? And then he's leaking into a pass play. It is a major bind for NFL defensive coordinators. Facts. So well, what you're saying about Laporta is critical.
Well, and if you look at – this is what I think I'm the most impressed with. First of all, 4.5940, 90th percentile.
Great.
And then his agility score, 11.16 in the 90th percentile for a tight end to be that athletic – It's like Dalton Kincaid. It's how I feel about Dalton Kincaid. Now, Dalton Kincaid can't block.
And two rounds later.
Yeah. Right. And two rounds later. I mean, this is a guy who's going to be going the third round, fourth round of rookie drafts for sure.
Kincaid is one of those tight ends that is primarily going to be split out, but he's so athletic and has such good hands that he can compensate for those like mismatch questions. Well, there's not really a question. Like you can put a legitimate defender against him in pass and he's still going to come down with the ball because he has such good ball awareness.
As an Oregon Ducks fan, it's
dude, like I'm a duck.
Kincaid. Oh,
I'm better. A duck.
Yeah, let's go.
Okay, cool. Matt, let's go. Yeah,
Kincaid is a nightmare.
I had no idea this was a matchmaking show, but you guys somehow found love. This is beautiful.
I didn't either. I'm literally born and raised in Oregon. My mom is a University of Oregon alum. Grew up, born and bred Oregon.
Let's go.
Yeah. So Kincaid, I kind of hate him, but I also love him. Like,
sure, that makes sense.
Yeah, it's just how it is. But
man, you guys are gonna hate me next season because Coach Prime's bringing CU back, baby. We're gonna tear through the Pac-12.
The fact that listen, we're taking a major divergence here off of our track, but the fact that Coach Prime is getting top tier recruits, especially on the defensive side, because they're going like, oh shit, I'm a corner. I want to learn from Primetime.
Damn straight.
You see them, well, you see these graphics from like, whatever it is, 24/7, whatever. They're like, oh, this rivals person is selecting rivals, Alabama, Michigan, Ohio State, Colorado. You're like what? Wait. Is
and Colorado happening? Has like the 65% chance of commit. You're like, wait a second.
Yeah, you're like, what is going on? But he's building something, man. As a Duck fan, I hate it. As a college football fan, I love it. Like, I think that it's really, really cool. Like,
well, if Oregon comes out here and plays in Boulder this year, I haven't seen the schedule yet. You guys should fly out. I'm 30 minutes from the stadium. We'll go watch the CU game.
I think we should absolutely do it. The fact that Christian Gonzalez went from Colorado to transferring to Oregon before the prime.
To be a first round pick.
Pick. Honestly, but, I mean, it worked out. I got Christian Gonzalez going to Detroit. First round.
I think, well, I mean, I genuinely, as soon as that Okuda news came up, I would lock that in as well. Like, that is quite literally going to happen.
We are going down a rabbit hole hard. But
John, give us your tight end.
Super tight end.
Give us your super tight end.
All right. We're going to go Brenton Strange. We're going to go Penn State, phenomenal, which had one of the absolute worst passing offenses in college football. Parker Washington, also at the wide receiver position. I'm putting my pin in it here while I've got a moment. I think he's also a guy that can develop into being a great slot receiver in the NFL. So remember Parker Washington as one of those third or fourth round draft picks in your rookie drafts as well. The dude can play. He's a dog. He reminds me a little bit of Amon-Ra St. Brown. I think we said that maybe about a month ago, Nate, as well.
Yeah, we did.
That we drew that comp. But Parker Washington's a dog. Brenton Strange also incredibly athletic. We were talking about these tight ends that can stay on the field in all phases, that can be great run blockers, that can also run routes, that have good athleticism. Brenton Strange to me fits that bill. When you look at his RAS, again, he's like slightly undersized at just under 6'4", but he's got 253 on him, so he's got plenty of meat on the bones. His bench press was great. His vert was elite at 36 inches. His broad 10'4", also an elite score. His 40-yard dash, 4.7, great. So, like, all of his athletic testing shook out. His agility grades were not great. His shuttle was not something to write home about. He came in at a 4.46 in the shuttle, which is – like a 4.62 grade on a 10 point scale. His three cone 7.25 was like a 5.23 on the 10 point scale. So his agility in terms of change of direction, not great. This isn't the tight end that's going to run whip routes and stuff like that for you. But as someone that is a tenacious run blocker that also has good straight line athleticism and explosive grades for being able to like leap and make contested catches and stuff like that, he's a very, very interesting tight end prospect for me. I think that I don't think he's going to sneak into day two. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, if you guys think otherwise. I think he's probably going day three, but if you're making a dart throw pick in a tight end premium league in the third or fourth round of your rookie drafts, I think that his athletic testing and the production that we've seen out of him, I mean, he had no less than, let's see, he was 3 touchdowns in 2021. He averaged 11.3 yards per, he averaged 11.3 yards per carry over his last two seasons with 5 touchdowns. Projecting tight ends is so hard because their stats just don't translate linearly to the NFL. But you look at someone who's a red zone threat who averaged over 11.3 yards per carry, and that's also a really good run blocker, you're projecting a tight end that can stay on the field on all three downs. And that to me is very interesting. I'm not saying he's worth an early pick. by any means in your rookie drafts. But if you're looking to make a dart throw in those late rounds as someone that can develop into being a consistent tight end at a position in the NFL that is so wide open in terms of fantasy production, this guy could easily end up being a top 15 tight end in his rookie season, depending on his landing spot, and could develop into being a top 8 guy. And
I wouldn't doubt it at all.
Fantasy, that would not surprise me at all.
Well, and here's the I just looking at his stats, here's something that just is impressing the hell out of me right now. 2020, 85% catch rate. And now, granted, there's only 20 targets, but he caught 17 of 20 and turned 2 into touchdowns. Then you look at his most heavily used season, 41 targets, 32 catches for a 78.1% catch rate. Yep. That is a guy that you use in the red zone, and he can block. This is a guy that's going to get three down usage in the NFL in the right situation.
I agree. You tell me
situation matters more, but
you tell me he's a fourth round draft pick. I'm not going to be surprised at all.
If I think it's probably his fourth round. But I mean, so was every relevant tight end.
Yes.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. You want those versatile guys that are going to be able to contribute in a multitude of ways. Like I said, it's like the tight end version of an RPO. You don't know how they're going to be deployed on any given down. Is he going to try and chip the edge, or is he going to run a route against your nickel corner? Those are two very, very different plays, very different outcomes, very different personnel alignments that you're having to account for. It's fascinating. The tight end position is a chess piece on a checkerboard.
Yes.
It's fast.
So this actually leads really, really well into my guy, because my guy transferred from Penn State to Old Dominion because he just wasn't seeing any volume. He had 5 targets over 3 seasons at Penn State. Then he transferred to Old Dominion, and that is Zach Kuntz. Guys,
he played NFL combine history.
Oh, yeah, and it's not even close. But also what's really impressive for me is his 2021 season, first at Old Dominion, had a 65.8% catch rate, but he also had a 26.4% target share, which for a tight end, that's a massive target share. Very elite. And last season, he caught 12 of his 27 targets for 143 yards and 2 touchdowns before he got hurt. Not a great catch rate at 44%, but you know that would have been better if he had played the full season. And who doesn't love a tight end that runs a 4.5 5.40? Like, come on. He's a tight end with size. He's 6'7", 255. So I believe he's the biggest tight end in this class.
Darnell
Washington's a little bit bigger.
Would bake the difference.
Darnell technically measured in actually shorter, and then they took a picture beside each other, and Zach Kuntz even posted, he was like, he's way bigger than I am. I don't know what you're doing with these measurements.
But then his arm length, 34 inch arms. I mean, that wingspan, his catch radius is ridiculous.
It's huge.
Now, my question is, where does he land? What team does he land with? Because if he lands somewhere like Tennessee, somehow New England decides to dart throw him.
Oh,
I'm not excited about it.
Yeah.
I'm not excited at all.
Versus guys like who have 8 tight ends. That'd be God.
Well, Mike Gesicki is going to break out this year, just so everybody knows. You can shake your head at me all you want, John. Just make sure that you let everyone know I was right when it happens here.
Okay.
Zach Kuntz, I think he's my fourth favorite tight end. Fifth favorite tight end in this draft. Because, I mean, obviously you've got Kincaid, Musgrave, those guys. But Kuntz, he's so freaking athletic. And at that size, it almost feels to me like, how could this guy miss? How could he miss? His catch radius is 10.6. That's ridiculous. Most wide receivers don't even get remotely close to that. He's in the 100th percentile. He's the best of the best in catch radius. What more do you want out of a tight end? What more?
There's an interesting narrative from Penn State as well. Like I always have to bring this up with Kuntz. It's one of my favorite, like, nobody really knows about this story. Penn State at the time that Kuntz committed had 3 of the top 5 tight end prospects commit to their program.
Crazy.
It was Pat Freiermuth, Kyle Pitts, and Zach Kuntz. And they told Kyle Pitts to walk because they preferred Kuntz.
Oh,
I did not know that. That's crazy. Yeah. Wow.
I didn't either.
Wow. That is crazy.
Obviously, hindsight is 20/20 too, because they didn't utilize Kuntz at all while he was there. And Pat Freiermuth broke out as one of the best tight ends in the country. But
listen, yeah. I like to consider myself someone that is in tune with what happens in college football. I am more than happy to tip my hat when I hear something that I haven't heard before. That is a very, very good one.
Interesting. Interesting. I mean, I feel like he has the chance to end up being the tight end one from this class when we look back at the end of the 2023 season. Depending on landing spots.
Yeah.
Swear to God, if he goes to New England or like Atlanta for some reason, forget about it. He's dead to me.
There's
a chance.
You know what wouldn't surprise me? And I just want to say it, because if I don't say it and it happens, I'll be mad. Watch Zach Kuntz be a mid-round target for the Panthers.
Oh, I wouldn't hate that.
I think that wouldn't hate that at all.
You bring in a rookie quarterback, obviously, at 101. You just signed a veteran tight end in free agency, but you're bringing in a rookie behind them. Zach Kuntz with the athleticism.
Looks a lot like Greg Olsen, too.
Right?
Yeah, right.
Like he does, that, actually. Honestly.
No, he really does. I'm looking at his picture right now.
Yes.
It popped into my head. It popped into my head while we're talking about it, and I would be remiss for not saying it out loud. But watch that be a mid-round pick for Carolina to pair with their rookie quarterback that they're obviously taking a 101.
That would be fantastic, especially because if you look at – there's nothing exciting about that receiving core, really. I mean, Adam Thielen's past his prime. Terrace Marshall is at DJ Chark, can't stay on the field. Laviska Shenault, as much as I love him, guy can't stay on the field. And it's a Frank Reich offense. And we've seen how Frank Reich uses talented athletic tight ends. Yep. Oh, John, you just got me so excited.
They signed Hayden Hurst.
Thank God we're only waist up here, man. Whew.
I know.
So excited.
Woo! They signed Hayden Hurst, which obviously is going to be their default one this year.
Sure.
But tight ends take time in the NFL. Right. They take time to develop. But isn't that a perfect situation? You have a veteran aging tight end in front of you as the starter, and then you have this uber athletic mid-round rookie.
It's like in Madden when you sign the mentor and then you get the developmental boost for your rookies.
Yes.
I just like blew my own mind. That's like perfect.
I think it is great.
You blew my mind.
Frank
Reich
was incredibly disrespected and mistreated for being fired from Indianapolis. Like, that guy did great things with nothing.
Yeah. And then Jim Irsay stepped in and made him start Sam Ellinger. There you go. I want to get to a couple things from the chat here real quick. We've got Mr. Scampers, our favorite fantasy cat out there. I got you both beat on Kincaid. I'm a USC fan.
Traditionally, we've got destroyed USC continuously.
We've got Jamie Prague in the chat. He wants to know, where would you rank Jelani Woods in this year's class? I mean, he's probably fourth. Top five. Yeah,
tight end
probably.
Four. I've answered this exact question, so I have an answer in the pocket. Tight end four.
Okay. I haven't actually done the work. I was going to say six off the hip. So close.
I think I have him ahead of Mallory. I would go Kincaid, Meyer, Darnell. And in all honesty, Darnell is probably the riskiest tight end pick that you're going to make in the next 5 years. Because
risky. Yeah.
But man, all of that upside.
The upside though.
Well, yeah, his ceiling's through the roof.
Darnell,
his floor
is and Jelani, because I mean, speaking of most athletes, Jelani did have the number one RAS score until Zach Kuntz tested. So Jelani has some pretty insane upside himself. I would probably have him tight end four behind Darnell.
Okay. All right.
That's fair.
Then one more from our boy down under, Brad Bolt. Thanks for tuning in from Australia, my friend.
Max.
Zach Kuntz would be a great addition to the Panthers. If you guys don't know, big time Panthers fan. So there we go. And guys, if you're looking for straight NFL content, I'm just going to plug Brad here real quick. Check out NFL Lab Network at NFL Labs on Twitter. He does fantastic work. He just had Field Yates on his show, Danny Heifetz from The Ringer as well. So I mean, he's putting out some good content. Yeah, let's go.
Way to go,
Brad has no fear. We're hopefully going to be interviewing some prospects on the NFL Lab podcast here coming up in the next couple of weeks because Brad's the man and he's amazing. So just wanted to throw that out there. Matt, I want to thank you so much for coming on with us, man. This was a blast. So we're going to have you on again. Make sure you're checking out his work, Dynasty Factory, Dynasty Football Factory.
You got it.
Dynasty Football Factory and B Roto. He's a fantastic analyst, director of their content. Don't miss what he's putting out. This dude is just so freaking smart, and you're a better Dynasty player for listening to him. Thanks. And of course, my co-host, John. Thanks for coming on with me every Wednesday, buddy. We will be back next week, next Wednesday, live at 6 p.m. Eastern. You can look for the podcast to drop whenever I get time on Friday. It's usually about midday here, mountain time, so around 2 o'clock East Coast. Until then, folks, we'll see you next week. I stay loose, I stay hype. I stay loose, I stay hype. I stay loose, I stay hype. I could do this all night, because I do what I like. Yeah, I do what I like. Yeah, I do what I like.